Hello and hi. Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests today are raconteurs in the comic book industry. We have Adrian Wassel from Vault Comics and my new favorite storyteller, John Sway, who is the writer behind Sarah and the Royal Stars. And I absolutely cannot wait to talk about this story because it's an awesome story. It's a delightful, brilliant artwork. And I just kind of begged and pleaded until they decided to talk to me. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
So, John, you are the writer of Sarah and the Royal Stars. Can you go into some detail about where the story came from and how you chose this lovely graphic novel format, comic book format, to tell this tale?
Yeah, to steal a phrase, I don't feel like I chose Sarah and the Royal Stars. Sarah and the Royal Stars chose me. It's to me, it's a story that kind of has roots and exists somewhere beyond, you know, our reality. And I was just happened to be the lucky one to kind of see it and be the one to bring it forth to share it with everyone. But it started quite a few years ago, just completely unrelated to storytelling. I just happened to stumble on the idea of the Royal Stars, which is its origins come from Persian myth and looking at like some of the religious texts from Zoroastrian religion. And it just kind of stuck with me for quite a few years. And as I was doing my own research, just digging into the mythology around the Royal Stars, I kind of started to see a story form. And from there, I just, you know, plugged away at it, worked on it, and you know, happened to meet Adrian and the other guys from Vault at San Diego Comic-Con one year. I don't remember what year it was now. Maybe 2017, Adrian? I don't know. 2018? Something like that.
I have no idea. time was
Yeah, what is time now?
So.
I was actually planning it. I had pitched Adrian, I think, something else entirely, something about gods and all this type of stuff, but in a very different setting. It wasn't a fantasy thing. And I think when we reconnected and I happened to send him the pitch I originally sent him, and I was like, hey, I also happen to have this thing called Sarah and the Royal Stars. Do you want to take a look at it? And sent that along as well. And Adrian liked Sarah way more than he liked the other one. So that's kind of how we landed on doing Sarah.
So Adrian, when you first got a look at Sarah and the Royal Stars, was it just a story? Was it story and sketches? What was it about the story that John gave you that said, oh yeah, this is it?
I think, and John, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think at the very beginning it was just story sheets. We didn't have any visuals yet. But part of what drew me to the project was how clearly defined the visual language and storytelling of Sarah would be. John just had such a rich and clear vision for the world and for this big cast of characters. And it's a bit surprising how rare that is in comics pitches. Typically, you know, we've all learned to lean on the all-stars in comics, the artists, to do that heavy lifting. And John instead had this really rich world imagined with a really incredible cast of characters that immediately I could see. And I could imagine the storytelling on the page. I could feel the sort of experience, the reader experience that I would have when I was holding this book. And that was probably the first thing that signaled to me I'd be a fool if I let anyone else take it, and that it had to come out through Vault. And, you know, at that time, I was really hunting for fantasy, too. It was like Game of Thrones final season, when everybody decided that they had to do their, you know, sort of sword and sorcery. And there was a dearth of fantasy in the comics landscape at that point. And so John approached with a story that drew from a host of mythologies that are fairly well underrepresented in fantasy at large, but especially in the comic space, with a cast that I could immediately imagine that drew from really rich iconography of, you know, myths. You can go find images of Mitra, and we did, and, you know, that was part of Audrey's incredible process. And so all of these pieces came together, and I was like, okay, this is more than an idea. This is a story that needs to be told. So it was pretty easy to say yes. It was, in fact, very difficult to say no. I felt that urge, that kind of pull, that if I said no to this, I'd kick myself down the road.
And Audrey is the artist, Audrey Mock. The process for choosing an artist, how does that go for people who are not aware of exactly how much work goes in to making the comic books they pick up every month?
As far as Sarah goes, I had approached Audrey before I pitched to Adrian. I became familiar with Audrey's art just through, I think it was either Instagram or Twitter. And I was really drawn by her style, her storytelling, and just kind of the ease at which, you know, she could approach characters on the page. She's super talented. And I knew right when I first saw her work that I was like, I really want to work with her someday. So when opportunity arose to pitch to Vault, I asked Audrey. I was like, hey, you know, I just kind of reached out. I was like, hey, I got this thing. Curious if you want to take a look, see if you're interested in possibly drawing this and, you know, becoming like co-creating it with me. I sent it to her. She read it. She really liked it. And she was like, yeah, I'm on board. So, yeah. And then when I sent the pitch over to Adrian, I let him know, like, you know, Audrey was the one that was attached to draw this.
And working with Audrey is, it's not even work. She makes the process just a joy from start to finish. She's detail oriented in all of the right ways, making sure that characters interact on the page in a way where you can always tell them apart. Like, her character designs are distinct. You can see a silhouette of any one of the characters and immediately know who they are. She brings this incredible mastery of multiple styles to the comic format. So, you know, she makes very sort of conceptually like North American comic book looking pages, but then knows all of the kind of brilliance of manga, and using a lot of the sort of shorthand and also the mastery, especially of action sequences, that sometimes can feel a little stilted in, you know, sort of North American comic books pages. And so her ability to bring all of that to the page just made it, like I said, not only a no-brainer from the pitch perspective and greenlighting it, but just an absolute joy in the process. There's not been a single part of working with Audrey where I felt like I was doing any work, and instead I just got to sit there and go, like, well, I'm just an editor in name alone here because John and Audrey have this, you know, covered start to finish.
And I think that's, you mentioned, you know, that the manga edge. I think that's the part that was missing in my mind, because I was trying to figure out how to describe her artwork. There's it It's both still and energetic at the same time. And even looking at the images, you can tell that each of the different characters moves in their own distinct way. Even though there's no real hinting of motion, you can tell that they're, you know, the bull is going to be slow and moving, and the scorpion is going to be angry and fast, and Sarah is going to be sort of still finding her own way. She's sure-footed, but, you know, unsure mentally. There's an energy in her art style that comes through like that, and I was trying to put my mind on it, and you said it, you know, it's a combination of, you know, the old Marvel DC and the new manga anime. I'm like, oh my god, that's it right there. And it's a delight to lose myself in that kind of artwork to go along with the story. So again, thank you.
Yeah, Audrey's pretty good. I couldn't imagine doing this book with anybody else. In my mind, it wouldn't exist without Audrey. And she's absolutely my first choice and really the only choice. So like the stuff that you see, you know, a lot of it's her brilliance and just kind of her talent, her ability to tell a story and her ability to make the characters act on the page, which I feel like in a lot of, at least in American comics, I think sometimes it's lost, and she's one of those people where you could feel the emotion when, as you're flipping through the pages. You could see very clearly what each character is feeling, and you know, and how they're interacting with each other. And you know, she makes it look really easy, but it's so hard to do, and she did an amazing job.
Adrian?
Oh, I don't really have anything to add there. I'm just echoing John. I can sit here. We can just spend the entire time praising Audrey, because that's really what should be happening.
Oh yeah, definitely. I would, the covers of the issues, you guys should be selling posters of those.
Those are some of my absolute favorite covers ever published at Vault. And I could be wrong on this, but I think that Sarah in the Royal Stars was Audrey's first complete run in comics. I know that she had done a bunch of stuff for Archie, and I was a huge fan of those various Archie comics that she had done. And maybe I'm wrong and I just missed something, but I think that Sarah might have been her first complete run. Do you know, John?
I don't know. I think the closest thing I could think of was maybe her Josie and the Pussycats work, but I don't know if they started, right, if she started with like issue one and ended with the final issue. I noticed her work on Josie was, she was on there for a good while. So, but it may have continued after she left, because I think she left Josie to come to Sarah, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I'm not 100% on that.
Well, my point in here was just to praise her even more, because, you know, it's such a different thing working in licensed space where you have defined characters. And sure, I mean, you get to, you know, recreate some of the costuming, but you're working in a very specific space with a fandom that expects certain things about the character design, the character interactions on page. To move from that so seamlessly into creator-owned, where probably the hardest thing to do is recognize that there are no expectations. That book, nothing about that book exists in any reader's mind until the first issue is really out there in the world and it's read by, you know, thousands and thousands of readers. That's such a different place to come from, you know, kind of creatively, when you compare it to something like working in Archie, where we have just this rich, you know, history as readers and fans, or Marvel or DC, obviously. And so for Audrey to move from that space to something like Sarah and the Royal Stars and, you know, frankly, flex a bunch of different muscles and do it so well is just further, you know, reinforcement of how phenomenal she is, not only as an artist, but as a storyteller.
Cool. Like I said, this story is so rich, and even though it's not specifically stated, there you can feel the history of the legends behind the Royal Stars, behind Sarah's family's bloodline, and you know, just from a selfish storytelling addict perspective, I would love to see more of them, but it seems like it's a completed story at the end, but, you know, prequels exist.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one day we will revisit the world of Sarah. I do have ideas for more stories around Sarah specifically, and also stories around the stars themselves. I don't know if we'll ever get the chance to do that. Maybe a lot of fun. But, you know, I think where issue 10, volume 2 closes, kind of leave it up to the reader to imagine what happens next.
Now, as a storyteller, do you have a type of story that intrigues you when you're coming up with something? I mean, do you prefer fantasy? Do you prefer, you know, mythology and folklore? Do you, you know, venture into space opera at all?
I don't know if that I stick to any one particular genre. I draw a lot of my influence from, you know, reading everything but fiction. I'm not very well read as Alan is fiction. A lot of writers are. I'm not one of those writers. I, you know, as far as Sarah goes, I didn't, you know, all the research I did was like academic papers, studies on astronomy, astrology, mythology, all this type of stuff. And, you know, it was, a lot of it is kind of bland. It's not exciting to read, but I find it fascinating, especially when you start looking at the mythology surrounding the stars, because they have reoccurring themes, not just in the Persian mythology, but around the world. The different constellations kind of reappear throughout various cultures in the world with a similar story attached to who those beings are, whether they are the stars themselves or the stars and constellations are representative of different gods and like deities. So that's what was the initial thing that really fascinated me about the Royal Stars themselves and the constellations in the sky, was that there was this reoccurring theme that happened between cultures that historically didn't have any contact with each other. So it was like, what exactly is happening there? Are there stories being transmitted? And, you know, they're obviously being transmitted to us here on Earth, but how are they being transmitted? What is the mechanism that causes this reoccurring story or reoccurring theme? So a lot of things that kind of interest me as a storyteller is stuff like that, is a lot of mythology, is the cultural touchstones that seem to echo between different cultures, and finding a common thread between that type of stuff. And, you know, of course, just scrolling through the internet, you'll see like a cool story about a new discovery about black holes or something like that. I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, so stuff like that is kind of what sparks my interest, and then start to kind of dig in a little deeper. So I don't know. I like to play around in a lot of different genres and just kind of see what comes up.
Now, you know, in addition to science fiction and horror, I'm a big fan of fantasy. I'm a big fan of mythology and folklore. You said you did a lot of research to ground your story about the Royal Stars. Is there a bibliography or a list of references where somebody who wants to find out more about these Persian myths and the stories of the Royal Stars, you know, to basically follow the same path you did to learn more about the real world history of those legends?
I don't have a bibliography. I probably should but there was a book that was very instrumental for me because it's based on all these different studies. The author's name is Richard Hinckley Allen, and the book's name is called Star Names, Their Lore and Meaning. And basically he tracks the names and where they come from. And a lot of them come from Arabic. That's why, like, for instance, you'll see Aldebaran, right? Mm-hmm. The letter A-L is like honorific in Arabic. So a lot of the stars in the sky start with the letters A-L because so much of the study of astrology started in the Arabic world. And through this book, he kind of tracks the history of the names, what they're named in different cultures. And then he kind of tells their stories. And there you can kind of track the similarities between the different stories that are told. So the book was published, I think, back in the 50s or something like that. So some of his references in some of the stories and are out of date, especially when it comes to the Chinese names, like the way they're written is before the standardization of it, so they're written kind of funny. But you could kind of, from there was kind of a big jumping off point for me.
I have a book called Star Names and Their Meanings, but it was from the 80s and it had a really strange pink and blue cover.
I think that's the same one, because I'm looking at it right now. It's pink, purple, and orange. I think it was reprinted in the 80s, but I think it was originally written quite a while back. I can't find the original publishing date here, but
I think it's quite old. Like,
yeah,
that's hilarious.
It's like
1899 was the
first.
Yeah,
I was gonna say it's like 19th yeah. century. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. 1899. Yeah, but this book was huge for me. I think it's an amazing book. And if anybody is interested in where the names of stars come from, some of the stories attached to them, it's such a cool book. But it's an academic book, so it's, you know, it's not exciting to read, but it's filled with amazing information.
Yeah, it's one of those reference books that you never think you'll need it, but when you do, you're glad you have it.
Yeah. I can't even remember if I got this book before I started researching the Royal Stars or after. It's just, this book is just kind of always on my shelf, and it was something in the early stages of developing the story. I referenced the book a lot. And, you know, looking at it now is kind of the first time I've looked at it in quite a while. But yeah, this is a good one to go with.
Yeah. So this has, I'm just happy and just cracking up at the fact, hey, we've got the same book. I know what he's talking about. So, you are working on a new story for Vault, and Adrian here is here to drop the hammer if you let slip too much. But what can you tell us about the new story?
It's me jumping into the sci-fi genre with a cyberpunk story, but it's the way I pitched it to Adrian was it was a way for me to kind of reclaim the Asian aesthetics that have been used a lot in the cyberpunk genre, especially in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
And recenter that story with Asian characters in the Asian world, and kind of put Asian faces front and center in the genre of cyberpunk. So it's kind of this mixture of futuristic assassins and streetwear and Asian street food, and touching on the history of European colonialism throughout East Asia, all kind of mixed into a giant bag and thrown back out there at you.
Cool. And Adrian, when can we get the official announcement for when to expect this story?
Announcement will come in sort of late spring, early summer, and the book will be out toward the end of this year. That's when number one will drop. And I could not be more excited. Once again, we've teamed up with just an absolutely incredible co-creator. So Stacy Lee is the artist, and she designed Silk for Marvel, and is just, you know, one of the most, just such an impressive artist, and already, you know, her work is phenomenal on this unnamed project. but I can't wait for people to see it. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled, especially kind of late spring, early summer. We'll have the announcement with lots of gorgeous artwork to share too, to get people really hooked on the world.
Cool. Now, as a publisher of some very, very compelling stories, in addition to Sarah and the Royal Stars, you've got The Plot out there. What do you look for in terms of the story you want to tell, you want Vault to tell?
Oh man, that's a question that can take a lifetime to answer. So Vault, you know, started as a science fiction and fantasy focused publisher. We've since added horror, but that still creates a fairly narrow lane. Obviously, under these big umbrella genres, you have the myriad subgenres, and that's great. That means we've got a focus, but we also have room to play. I look at our catalog kind of in its totality as a yearly slate, and I try to make sure that we have, you know, what we can call maybe tent poles or like pillars, those big representations of the genres that everybody's going to want when they hear sci-fi, fantasy, horror. You can't have a horror, promise that you're a horror genre, like a focused publisher, and not have a haunted house story, right? You can't promise that you are a science fiction focused publisher, and not have a space opera. So we make sure our catalog reflects those big pillars. And then I like to try to balance it with a lot of the emerging or more underrepresented subgenres within sci-fi, fantasy, horror. So, you know, that's when we start to push into stuff like, say, No One's Rose, which is, you know, kind of biopunk dying earth story that's playing and mixing some newer genre spaces, emerging genre spaces, with really well-established genre spaces. And then you look at something like Sarah and the Royal Stars, for instance. It's stepping into a well-tread, well-loved genre path, but as we talked about already, pulling in a largely underrepresented mythos and mythology, especially in the comic space. And that immediately sets it apart. When it comes to what I look for specifically in a story, there's no certain criterion except one, and that is that it's a story the creators feel like they have to tell at Vault. I think it's become increasingly sort of easy for me to sense when a creator is just kind of throwing what they have at the wall to see what sticks. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, because frankly, that's how you have to navigate most of the comic landscape / most of the publishing landscape. But because Vault is so focused, because we try so hard to have a curated feel where it is actually possible to be a fan of the entire catalog, both in terms of number of releases a year and just conceptually, like, oh wait, if I read this, I'll probably enjoy most, if not all, not everything that Vault offers, because we try really hard to create that curated feel for our slate year to year. I think that creators have learned what pitches of theirs feel like a Vault book, and go, okay, this is a story that if I bring it to Vault, it's not like, oh, I think this is the right one that Adrian, you know, wants. It's instead like, this book will do best there. It will thrive in that kind of genre-specific place. It will have the right support system from a team, from the Vault team, that knows and loves genre. So, you know, John was talking about his new story, the cyberpunk story that he's got coming, and I, as John knows, I'm a huge fan of cyberpunk. And so just as an editor on the very like base level, I feel like I can at least somewhat successfully be a sounding board, and be of help, not just somebody who moves deadlines around on a calendar. I think that's what I look for in a story or a pitch, is that story that a creator feels has to be a Vault book. It's like an ache in their bones. This is the right place for that story. And a lot of times that goes unspoken, but you can tell almost immediately. And those are the stories that almost come like they're already greenlit. When by the time they arrive, it's clear that they wouldn't have gone anywhere else.
Is that what you look for? A story that doesn't need a lot of your input in fine tuning, or do you prefer to say, okay, there's something here, and I think I can get it over that hump to where I need it to be?
Oh man, I think creators would have to answer that question. John can tell you whether or not I'm just a pain in the ass with too many notes, or if I'm actually helpful.
I as far as Sarah goes, and the new project that we're working on, I tell everyone that Adrian was instrumental in kind of helping to form the story into what it was. I think a lot of the initial ideas, characters and all that, was determined as I was writing the pitch. But once we started to kind of dig into the actual scripts, is really where Adrian's help was instrumental in kind of making Sarah what it is. You know, when a scene needs, you know, more tension, or when the scene needs to be a little lighter, or the character is, you know, needs to land certain bits of dialogue, you know, Adrian's kind of there. He's kind of the one that's helping me see things that I'm missing. And Adrian has a very strange sense for when I did not listen to myself. he always does this. When I send him the script, he'll leave a note and be like, I think you should do, you know, maybe you should do this. And what he's saying more often than not is at a place where I second guess myself, where I was like, I don't think that's the right way to go, you know, or, you know, maybe I should go a different direction. And he always seems to find the areas where I second guess myself and pulls me back to my initial instinct. It's kind of creepy. I don't know how it's reoccurring theme in his notes to me is, yeah.
So basically, John, you're saying that Adrian invades your dreamscape and sort of pushes you down the right path into the waking world. Okay, cool.
Adrian's got like some kind of weird alien powers, you know. He's just reads my mind.
I never claimed to be human, so, you know.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Oh my goodness gracious. But anyway, Vault Comics is putting out some of the coolest stories in there in comic and graphic novel format. Sarah and the Royal Stars was one that just completely grabbed me. So thank you guys for putting that out there.
Oh yeah, thank you for taking a chance on it. I know there's so much out there these days as far as media goes. And, you know, I'm really glad that people picked up Sarah, gave it a chance, and you know, whether you love it or you hate it, I'm thankful that people give it a chance. And you know, even happier if you connect to characters in the story. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. So John, where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter most of the time. It's just my name, John Sway. I don't tweet a whole lot. I find Twitter very distracting. and it's kind of like this weird angry place that makes me angry. So like I just tweet about food, and I basically tweet about stuff that if people are coming to look for like stuff that a writer would tweet about, I apologize. I typically don't tweet mine. if you're interested in like food pictures, you'll see some food pictures on my Twitter and just me being stupid with my friends. So I apologize. I don't have a huge online presence. That might change down the line, but as of right now, you can see my food tweets.
As someone who has a very eclectic collection of Twitter feeds, I feel ya, because on Slice of Sci-Fi, I will talk about science fiction, horror, baseball, soccer, and music, and astronomy, and, you know, NASA, space science, all sorts of different stuff. And I do so much Babylon 5 stuff, it has its own separate account. So, but yeah, I feel ya. But Adrian, tell people where they can find you online, and just, you know, full disclosure, I do follow Vault and Adrian and Damien on Twitter myself.
Well, yeah, that's the primary place would be Twitter. I'm at AF Wassel. Those are my initials. and then Vault is just at The Vault Comics. And those are our Twitter handles. I probably tweet too much and spend too much time there. Although I will say Twitter is an excellent resource as an editor. A lot of my scouting is spent on social media, not just on Twitter, but across, you know, pretty much every platform, and has been an invaluable tool for like my scouting efforts. So if I'm spending too much time there, at least I have a halfway decent excuse. If you come looking for a lot of comics based stuff, like I think you'll find it with me, maybe not as much with John. And if you find our interactions though, it'll basically just be John and I talking about food. That's pretty much all we talk about. You're not going to like find any like cool deep secrets about Sarah. If you scroll back through, you'll just see John and I talking about food, because we both share a love for all things that you can eat. So yeah, that's where you can find us, and hopefully you know, if you follow us on Twitter, especially the Vault page, you'll see a lot of fun stuff there. We try to be pretty active, share quite a bit, and engage with fans. We found Twitter to be a pretty fun tool. Mostly it's an angry place, like John said. Mm-hmm. But I think if you cultivate like the right kind of group of people, it can be fairly rewarding. So hopefully if you do follow us on Twitter, you won't just get angry.
Yes, there are bright spots of joy amidst the unending dumpster fire that is Twitter.
Yes, and Vault is also on Instagram and Facebook and all of that stuff. And we have a newsletter that you can sign up for if you go to our site, and a little surprise or fun thing. We'll have a whole new overhaul on our website soon, so it'll look much prettier and be far more functional in the not too distant future. And I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to John and Vault and Adrian on Twitter, as well as links to where you can buy Sarah and the Royal Stars. Volume 1 is out now. Volume 2 will be available for you to get from your favorite online or brick and mortar comic shops. And I have already pre-ordered it, so waiting on it. But
thank you.
You're very welcome. Like I said, this was a delightful story, and I am glad I found it. And I found out about it through Twitter, so there you go.
there's the evidence. It's not all bad.
Yeah, it's not a terrible. Yeah.
Yes, it's not all bad. But John, Adrian, thank you so much for your time and your insight into creating lovely graphic novel stories and what to look for when you're running a comics publisher.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama. From heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all. Take a ride with us at escapepod.org and buckle up because it's story time.
And yeah, Vault Comics is coming out with a lot of stories that go way, way, way beyond the superhero type stories. If you're looking for something different in both storytelling and art, I highly recommend Sarah and the Royal Stars. Go check it out. We'll have links to Volume 1 and Volume 2 where you can get them. You can pre-order them through Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you like to buy your graphic novels, or, you know, if you have a pull box at your local comic book store, call them, ask them to pre-order Sarah and the Royal Stars Volume 2 for you. How about you? Do you have any questions or comments on indie comics or comics in general? I am starting to read more graphic novels, trying to anyway, see what I'm missing out there. I can't catch up on them all. I wish I could, but there's just too much out there. Feel free. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com, or come to the website. Leave a comment on the various interviews and reviews. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let people know that you are enjoying the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. As mentioned earlier, you can check us out on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi. And yes, for you Babylon 5 fans out there, you can find me tweeting over at Babylon Podcast. And yes, since Babylon 5 has appeared in remastered and partially restored glory on HBO Max, there will be some discussions about that coming up soonish. You can also find us, the hub of all this geeky goodness, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, check out other interviews by other creatives of science fiction, fantasy, horror, paranormal, TV shows, movies, short films, comic books, a lot of different ways for people to express the genre stories that are in their hearts. We try to cover them here. Sliceofscifi.com. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all the other podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your donations through PayPal, your pledges through Patreon really do help keep the lights on around here. So thank you all who are supporting. And if you are interested in adding your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. You can pick a tier to be a different level supporter. All the Patreon patrons are eligible for perks. Every month I pick a winning email address out of the hat, and that supporter, that patron, gets to select a movie, TV show box set, or book as their perk. And my way of saying thank you for your support, that does literally help keep things on around here. But if you just want to help out every now and then, the link to use for that is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.